Welcome to Activation Energy by the Chemical Angel Network. I'm your host, Selma Duhovic. In this episode, I speak with Dr. Alexis Bazzanella, the head of research and project coordination at the German Society for Chemical Engineering and Biotechnology. Dr. Bazzanella has more than 15 years of experience in initiation, implementation, and management of research and innovation programs in the chemical sector on both German and European levels. He is the author of several technology studies on energy and resource efficiency and low-carbon process technologies, and has been a member of the editorial and management team of the European Technology Platform on Sustainable Chemistry. Thanks so much for taking the time to come on the show, Alexis. Let's start with the definition of sustainability as it applies to the chemical industry. How do you and your team think about this?
We don't have a clear definition of sustainability and of sustainable chemistry also. We see it as a very holistic approach. I think this is important. So we're looking not only at ecological effects, we're very much also looking into social effects. So what does an innovation, for example, mean in terms of employment, in terms of a social system? There are also social entrepreneurs, for example, doing innovation on sustainable chemistry or in sustainable business models. And of course, it's only feasible if it also is viable in terms of the economic pillar. It doesn't make sense to talk about a new product or a new process that is more sustainable if it's totally impossible to bring it to the market in the end. So, and holistically means really looking into all these aspects and not being superior in one element or on one criteria for the sake of disregarding the rest. So no trade-offs in the end. So that would be my, let's say, not definition, but my thinking on sustainability. But not solving the problem on one hand by creating a problem on another side.
Can you give an example or two of what this holistic approach looks like in practice?
In practice, it would mean that if we get a suggestion of an innovation, we look at it on a set of criteria. So let's say we at the IC Innovation Hub are looking into innovations by startups. So we give them a set of criteria, and that's a very long list of environmental criteria, of social criteria, and also economic criteria. And we want them to identify the pain points. We want them to identify the benefits, but also the downsides. So it starts with a very honest and thorough analysis of what you are doing, and providing also all the data that is needed to really do an assessment. So for example, some product which helps to save energy is fine on the energy side, but of course we have to look into what are the ingredients there. Is there anything which is harmful? Are there substances of high concern or very high concern in it? What happens at the end of the lifetime of the product? So are there any means of recycling for that? And of course, so that's the end of the life, but also the beginning of life, where do the resources come from? If it's from renewable sources, for example, does that somehow affect biodiversity? So is it monoculture of some crop or... So these are the kinds of questions we ask, and there you can evolve, and we see, okay, here are the weak points, and this is where the innovation has to work on, and the innovators have to work on sourcing of materials, designing products in a way that they are sustainably at the end of life time, and thinking about that just from scratch, just from starting to design the product, for example. Not do the most complex product, for example. So simplicity is meaningful in that sense. If you have a very complex product with many elements and materials that are somehow mingled together in a complex matrix, where you can already say, okay, this is impossible to disassemble at the end of the lifetime. This is the things we try to foster and this kind of thinking. And this is what I mean by holistic in the end.
I really like that. Not enough people think holistically and in systems. Would you then say that sustainable chemistry has truly become mainstream already?
I think it's on the way to become mainstream. Let's say green chemistry has been around for quite some time. That's more looking into the synthesis part, okay, doing that as efficient as possible, avoid waste, use renewables, for example, but that's very much focused on the synthesis part. And that does not necessarily also regard, do I need that product in the first place, for example? Are there perhaps also alternatives, even non-chemical alternatives? So for example, we would consider a sustainable chemistry thinking to also involve other alternatives which do not involve chemicals, for example. That for us is part of sustainable chemistry. So this is why it's very difficult to make a definition, by the way, because if you try to do that, you will automatically exclude certain pathways and certain solutions. And that's what we don't want. Okay. And so I said it's on the way in mainstream. So this is one part, the green chemistry, which is on the synthesis part. Let's say the concept of circular economy is clearly coming up. So in Europe, for example, this is a very hot topic. Also, the European Commission is doing a lot of funding in this area. So recycling of plastics and all these things. And this is also part of what I said, of the thinking. So what can I recycle? How can I recycle it? And how can I design a product in a way that it's easier to recycle and that I can get a higher recovery rate? Yeah, so I would say there are certain elements which are at the moment combined. So in that sense, I would say it's on the way of being a mainstream. By the way, the UN Environment Program has issued this Global Chemicals Outlook Report 2, which also includes the term and the question of sustainable chemistry and also innovation in sustainable chemistry. So also on the policy side, we would say this has really been taken up also by United Nations organization or other international organizations. For some of the chemical companies, I think this has been around for quite some long time. There are even stakeholder initiatives like in Europe, something that's called the European Technology Platform on Sustainable Chemistry, where a lot of stakeholders are engaged. So this is directed towards the EU funding program and then bringing up topics there. But this shows that it's not only an academic way of thinking, but also the chemical companies have really adopted it and are working on it.
Would you mind elaborating on the role of legislators and regulators in moving the needle forward and making sustainable chemistry mainstream?
Well, in general, their duty is to pave the way for framework conditions that make this innovation happen and the investments happen. I'll give you one example. There's a lot of movement in industry towards climate neutrality or greenhouse gas neutrality. And this involves a lot of new technologies and chemistry. Everyone is talking about green hydrogen and power to X technologies. And the question is, who's the front runner and who's doing the first investments? And this has many different implications that are also on the regulatory side, of course. So will there be enough renewable energy available at price that will allow the levelized costs of energy and products in the end that are competitive? And how do these products compete with the current fossil equivalents or fossil reference products? So will they be penalized at some point? So CO2 price will go up, or you will be penalized for using fossil resources. So these are important questions. So I see a lot of hesitation at the moment. So there's a lot of willingness, there's a lot of research going on, there's a lot of pilot and demonstration activities going on. But as the last step in going into investments into a real large-scale production plant, this is what is missing at the moment. And this, of course, relies to a certain proportion on the right framework conditions and a policy framework which incentivizes these developments.
And what about the other actors, the private sector, the society itself?
I think it's a team effort in the end. So there's not one stakeholder who has to move. It's I think it has to be based on a dialogue between the different stakeholders. This includes on the industry side, what do we need? What are our pain points? And on the policy side, to understand that. And of course, it's also on the society as a whole. If we tackle really large challenges like climate change, so is there a willingness to pay a premium, for example, for a product which is more sustainable? Or is that completely out of scope and everyone goes for the most cheap product anyway? I think there's a lot of questions related to that. And for me, it's a clear interaction between those providing the framework conditions and those actually doing things, like in this case, industry. So I don't say it's easy, but I think if we can't rely on one stakeholder to take over and say, okay, this guy is responsible and everything else is sitting idle and waiting for what's going to happen.
You're touching upon the challenges and barriers to achieving sustainability, and it sounds like they're mostly financial in nature. Does that mean that the technology to help us get there already exists?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of technologies out there that that are in the right direction. It's not always, let's say, I give you an example. We have issued a so-called innovation challenge for startups on a certain topic. So we did it now the second time. This time it was on renewable energy and sustainable chemistry. Last time it was on sustainable building and construction. And an interesting observation was there are, of course, let's say top-notch scientists and high-tech companies providing technical solutions. And on the other hand, we saw some proposals by startups in developing countries that were lost on the, let's say, top-notch science end, but they were quite creative in terms of new business models. So this also included, let's say, social investments. So the whole community was involved, like, for example, waste pickers for plastic bottles, and then the company did something useful with it in terms of recycling. So I think the combination of technologies, and I think there are a lot of also upcoming technologies which are available and are on a already high technology readiness level, so could be taken up into real business, with business models and new business models and business ideas. I think that this is what is missing sometime. I think the good news also on the investor side is, for example, that I see a lot of impact investors are coming up. So also not only looking at the return on invest, but also looking, okay, into sustainability here. So I see also on the investment side that this topic is very important, and that people start to understand that it's in principle also possible to earn money with the sustainable products and technologies. And let's say if we think about the whole cost of avoiding environmental problems in the end and what also adaptation to climate change might cost our whole society in the end, it's a very reasonable approach.
It is encouraging to hear that chemical companies are making investments into sustainable chemistry. Of course, now I'm wondering how they go about doing that. Do they build or buy? Do they invest in internal projects or invest in innovative startups or both? And in the latter case, actually, can you talk a bit about how chemical companies interface with those startups?
Well, most of the large chemical enterprises have their own corporate venture unit. So, and they have technology scouts. I think it's not very common that they try to do everything on their own. So they're looking for startups. Many have their own incubators or accelerator programs or boot camps or whatever, trying to find startups which are able to solve their problems. So I think this is quite common, and as I said, most of the large companies are active in this area. So this happens. If it's always eye to eye, that can be quite individually, of course. I think it has to be ITI on the same level. That's also a point we try to facilitate at the moment. So we're preparing at the moment also to better match large enterprises with the startups in our own global startup service pool. And the means we're trying to do this is a so-called corporate challenge, where we try to identify industrial problems from large companies. And so it's like a call for problem, open innovation challenge, where the large companies sponsor a certain prize. It can be a cash prize, or it can be just, they offer space in their labs and collaboration, or it can be an exit in the end for the startup. So there are different models. So far, we see that there are that the companies are interested in that. So I think there's still more we can do in this area, but I don't think we start from scratch. So there are collaborations between large companies and startups existing in the way I described.
Let's actually step back a bit, and this is something I should have led with. I apologize. ISE3, what is it? What are its mandates and goals? Let's hear more about that.
Yeah, ISE3 stands for International Sustainable Chemistry Collaborative Center. Long name, ISE3. In short, it's three partners that are engaged in this endeavor. We have a head office that's run by the German Development Corporation. They also take over the policy area, for example. They do workshops on certain topics, for example. And then there are two partners in that. So that's Leuphana University for the Research and Education Hub. So they work on certain research topics, but they also have implemented an international master in sustainable chemistry. And they just start also an international master of business administration, MBA in sustainable chemistry. So that's an international program for professionals that are already active in companies, for example, but they just do this master in sustainable chemistry or the MBA. And then it's our organization, that's DECIMA. So we are a Society for Chemical Engineering and Biotechnology based in Germany. And so we already have startup activities. So we're engaged in a German network of startup supporters. And so our role is actually to do the innovation field. And this is the main part of this is support of startups, as we jointly think that startups have a strong capacity for innovation. So they will be important front runners, and they can really implement sustainable technologies very fast. But as I said, we're also shifting now a bit more towards also supporting small, medium-sized enterprises and also large corporates, or the collaboration with large corporates with this matchmaking I was talking about a minute ago. So that is as a whole, and let's say GIZ, the benefit of GIZ is that they have offices in, I don't know, 130 different countries. So there are they have a huge network internationally, and that's very important for all of us because, well, we're a relatively small team sitting in Germany, and we try to, from our perspective, try to build up a startup service globally. So we need partners in different countries, in different world regions, which are familiar with the innovation ecosystem there, also running accelerators, incubators, or startup support networks. And so we're not trying to reinvent the wheel, but we're collaborating with them, and they are part of our family, so to say, and help us actually to bring forward the thinking of sustainable chemistry, because that's our whole mission to actually foster and implement sustainable chemistry on a global level. Perhaps one point to add, the whole ISE3, it gets funding from the Ministry for the Environment in Germany. So we had a 3 years period, and we have just started a second period for 4 years now, funded by BMU, as I said. So they are very interested because they are very active on the international arena on chemicals management. And they've always fostered sustainable chemistry, and they see us as the means of helping them implement the story of sustainable chemistry. And that's what we try to do.
That's really wonderful to hear. I realize the center is quite young, but I'm wondering if you can talk a bit about some specific projects that you've supported as a way of advancing sustainable chemistry in the last 4 years.
Yeah, I think we already did quite a few things. So we have our investor forum every year, for example, where we match startups with investors. And that's really a growing community. Also on the investor side, which we are very proud of, and also attracting impact investors. So that just happened in November, a few weeks ago. And so we have events, of course. Let's say if you want to talk about projects, there's one I want to highlight, perhaps we're doing in Brazil at the moment, and that's called Open Labs Brazil. And, when you're trying to establish a startup in the chemistry area, there's one important difference to startups in the IT world, and that's the need for large investments. So they need equipment, they need lab space, they need relatively expensive infrastructure. And so this project is about sharing lab space, available lab space and equipment infrastructure with startups. And so we teamed up with the SENAI Institutes in Brazil. That's a large research organization there. And they have labs, of course. And we did a sort of a mini contest for Brazilian startups. And they they proposed their business plan and innovation. And now they are, we've selected a few, and they are able to actually get access to the labs at SENAI for a certain period of time. And the whole thing is supported by a software platform, which allows to search for lab space and lab equipment and do the contracting, like Booking.com or something, some of these platforms where you're looking for flats for holiday, for example. And the company is also a startup that has been doing this in the London area. They are now reaching out also to other world regions. So they are part of the project. And we hope that this project, which is a pilot for Brazil at the moment, will be expanded and will be offered also in other regions.
It really sounds like a great way to engage sustainable chemistry startups and provide support by giving them access to lab infrastructure. I do want to shift the attention back to ISE3 itself. What kind of challenges have you as the organization had to overcome so far?
Apart from the COVID crisis, which let's say really messed up a lot of our plans in inviting people for events, of course, so we had to replan or reorganize a lot of things. Let's say the 2020 investor forum that was planned as a face-to-face meeting, and then we rescheduled it, and in the end it was totally virtually. So we're not talking about that, I guess. I'd say on the other hand, it's a challenge is, of course, limited resources, of course. Let's say it's talking about things internally. So we have to build our services on win-win situations with partners. That's very important. But of course, partners also need attention. We need to deal with them. They also want to see benefit on their side, of course. So that's one point, of course, which is where we have to balance our available resources with also some expectations sometimes. So we get very high expectations from certain developing countries, for example, saying, okay, oh, we're so glad that you're trying to help us, and this is what we all want. And of course, we have to say, okay, we try to do that on a global level, so we can't do everything just for Ghana, for example. We of course have to spread our resources a bit. So this is some of the internal challenges, of course. I guess for supporting startups, and I'm not only talking about our part in the innovation hub, because that's what I can really speak for, trying to convince investors also to engage in investments in developing countries, and not only look at the industrialized countries. Well, because they are, many investors come from industrialized countries. So we have US investors, we have German investors or from other European countries, for example. And of course, they are not very familiar with investing in a startup somewhere in Africa or in South America, for example. And that's something we need to work on to convince them, hey, look here, these are really amazing startups. And they, as I said earlier, that sometimes they really have the clever business ideas, not all high tech, but really clever business ideas, and say, okay, this has potential. This is clear on the local market, but also has potential to be extended towards other regions. But this, for example, takes time. And another challenge, perhaps, if I may add one more point. So we can't expect an innovation or a product that is being developed to be 100% sustainable just from the start. Okay. So what we try to bring across to startups is it's a journey. It's a development. Okay. And we assist you in this development. We want to see progress along the journey, of course, that they really work on the challenges and the issues. But even if we highlight what we call startup of the month, or we publish one article of a startup each month, we can't say, okay, this is the perfect example, 100% sustainable, no contradictory effects or trade-offs in any case. So this does not exist, frankly. But sometimes you get also this expectation. So everything we do and every innovation we publish, for example, well, you guys are talking about sustainable chemistry, so the examples you propose have to be perfect in all these aspects. And that's not the case.
That's an interesting challenge that I certainly wouldn't have foreseen. I'm now wondering what ISE3 will look like in 5 to 10 years. Where is it headed, and what do you want it to become?
I think we will probably still be based in Bonn, Frankfurt, and Lüneburg in terms of the three implementing partners. But my vision is actually that we have a growing network of partners that might also become sort of regional hubs for us, that representatives, okay, that really are on the same level, so they have the same thinking, so we're very aligned here. We have the same mission and the same goals, and so I don't see that we're just growing. Well, we might grow a bit organically, but I don't see an explosion of growth in the sense of our staff internally as ISE3 and the three partners, but more that we really make more and more use of the network, and that we create a community. And there are communities out there we are trying to attract. For example, we have a sustainable chemistry club in India. So things like that also exist. That's also open for people from other world regions. So we're trying to really create a family of like-minded organizations and partners. That way that the whole initiative is growing. So this would be my vision at the end, that we perhaps in 5 to 10 years, we have representatives really all over the world. So including some of the areas in Asia, for example, we have not covered so far, perhaps a few more centers also in North America. We're quite active in South America, actually, at the moment. Africa is still, we have activities in Kenya, in Ghana, in Egypt, for example, but there's also room for growth there. Yeah, so that would be my vision, actually.
Well, creating a community of hubs all over the world that strive towards achieving sustainable chemistry is certainly an ambitious goal, and I commend you for that. I will certainly watch your progress with great interest. Thank you again so much for sharing your insight with me, Alexis.